Hello, you're listening to People, Pets, and Vets with Dr. Brad Miller and registered veterinary technician Angel Martin.
Hello.
Each week we bring you current events and news in the veterinary industry and share our thoughts and perspective on how they impact us and our animal hospital. We also try to give you an inside and behind the scenes glance at our clinic and the people in it. This episode 87 is being brought to you once again by Georgia Veterinary Associates, a family of animal hospitals caring for your family pet. So just to remind people, Georgia Veterinary Associates, we have four practices.
We do.
Russell Ridge Animal Hospital is in Lawrenceville, Georgia. Hamilton Ridge is in Beaufort, Georgia. Apalachee Ridge is in Decula, not Dracula, Georgia.
Uh-huh.
And then Camden Village Animal Hospital is in Johns Creek, Georgia. So we haven't talked about that in a while.
No, we haven't. So, we are known on this side of town, on this side of Atlanta, as the Ridges.
The Ridges,
by other folks, but we don't really term ourselves that.
So, once again, we are in Studio B upstairs at Russell Ridge Animal Hospital, broadcasting from Lawrenceville, Georgia, where it's mild weather, no rain all week. We had rain this past weekend. It's going to happen again. But fall is upon us.
It's almost winter.
We were supposed to have a few snow flurries or flakes last week, and it didn't happen, but it was pretty cold.
So it did in some areas.
North Georgia.
I heard, even as far out as like Flowery Branch, Oakwood, I heard that there were snow flurries kind of puttering about, and then there was actually some snow that people could see like on the roofs and things like that.
Yeah, cool. Cool, cool, cool.
Is it a roof or a roof?
It's a roof. A roof.
A roof, not a roof.
Not a roof.
Okay.
Roof, I think, is if you're from the Northeast.
Okay.
Which you are not, nor am I.
No.
So, a lot of stories to cover, I think.
Yeah, we'll just pick through them.
We're kind of heavy into that, so I'm sure we'll be all over the place, but I would not have thought that there would be an elephant hospital.
It's the first time learning of it as well.
Yeah, so the world's first elephant hospital is still going strong after 27 years. Did you read where it's located?
No, did you? It's in Thailand.
It's in Thailand, yeah. So, I don't know. That's just kind of crazy. I don't know why it surprises me, but it does. You're reading it now.
I am. So I think it's super interesting, you know, like elephants are such magical creatures, I think, on this side of the world because we don't see them often, right? They're only in the zoos, circuses, when the circuses were still about, but you never really saw elephants, A, in the wild or B, in any other circumstance. And I think in places like that, they might be a little bit more common. I wouldn't know because I've never been there, but I can only imagine.
Yeah. Yeah, I bet they're, typically treated very well, almost like royalty, I would think. So,
yeah.
Another story brought up the fact that face masks can be a health risk. So, I don't know if we've talked about it.
Read the title of that story because that's actually pretty hysterical. Because my first impression was like, oh, okay, sure.
I went after I read it, that's where my mind went. Face masks pose a health risk to animals. And so in people, the health risk, in my opinion, is if you have a face mask and you wear it over and over and over again without cleaning it properly.
Well, there's that. And then there are some people, you know, like asthmatics or people with COPD or something like that. They do suggest that a face mask could actually cause like respiratory distress. And so you'll see a little bit more of the face shields in those types of people. But I just thought that the title of this just caught me in awe. And I was like, oh, great. Here we go. Who's writing these goofy articles?
Did you think it was going to be like a chemical or something in it?
Yep, exactly. Okay. I thought it was going to be like, oh, you know.
The human expression, the behavior that the dogs
aren't able to read people. Faces. And so then we're having more aggression and that kind of thing. Which, thankfully, here in our practices, we've not really seen.
No, but that... We've talked about this before. Let's talk about it again. What are dogs? Are dogs going to freak out when face masks come off of people? Because it's a totally new...
I don't really think so. Because they're not freaking out with face masks being on people.
I guess. But, you know, sometimes I'll walk into an exam room and it could be a big dog, little dog, doesn't matter. But they will just look at me and become uncomfortable and start growling. And there's a lot of different reasons.
Fair. There's a ton of different reasons, right? You're like... you're towering 6'2", 6'1", 6'2", something like
three,
that.
Maybe. Yeah.
Oh, 6'3". Okay. Excuse me. But you're towering over them. You're male, which most pets are, I'm going to not classify all, but most are going to have like an issue with anyways.
Right.
So there's that. I don't really think that the mask has a whole lot to do with it, but you know, one thing that we talk about in an animal hospital is white coat syndrome, which people get as well, right? Like you get nervous as soon as the doctor walks in.
I guess maybe you're right. We're still making eye contact, but you know, an animal too, if you will ignore them, they'll ignore you often. But if you start staring them down, then they will become uncomfortable. Same thing with people.
I don't know much about it, and I'm certainly not a behaviorist of any sort, but I feel like I watched a National Geographic documentary probably, oh gosh, maybe 10 years ago, and they were doing studies on how dogs read body language in people, and it really isn't the body, it's more so the eyes, and so the fact that we don't have our eyes covered, I do think it really helps the dogs kind of understand. But if you've ever seen a dog react to a person wearing a hat, I don't think it's the hat that's so scary. I think it's because they can't read the facial features of the human.
Yeah, maybe. Complex. So anyway, back to the story. The whole purpose of this article was the fact that human face masks can act like a foreign body, can cause a foreign body obstruction in pets that would eat them. And so we call anything a pet has eaten and taken into its GI tract that shouldn't be there and often results in obstruction, we call that a foreign body. And so that's exactly what this article is talking about. I forget her name or
it's whoever. It's her Labrador Retriever, which if anybody has one, they will eat anything.
You know, she tells a story. Well, one day, you know, Blackie, Brownie, whatever his name is, King, was off his food, I think began vomiting, and ultimately they x-rayed and probably saw the wires on the nose piece or something and figured out it was most likely a face mask. Surprisingly, we have not seen one of those here.
Not that we're aware of, yeah. I mean, we certainly haven't retrieved any face masks, but just think about the number of face masks that people are using. Yep. I'm certain dogs are chewing on them or eating them. You know, the not medical grade, but the like the three-ply blue masks. Yep. If they break, the strings could come off. Those could be potentially linear foreign objects or foreign bodies for cats who like to play with strings. So I never really, and before thinking about this, I never really thought that my dog would eat my mask, but
Makes sense. So if you're laundering them, you throw them in the laundry, and probably they have kind of a disgusting smell on the inside.
Or if you're using the disposables, you know, just the constant saliva that's kind of hitting that. I mean,
yeah,
dogs have such a keen sense of smell that it probably is appealing to them.
So yeah, interesting. So the minks are back in the news that we've talked about in Denmark and I think the U.S. farms that were depopulated. So now the concern with the minks is the minks that have escaped.
The escapees.
Potentially have this mutated coronavirus and they're going to infect the human population. The story goes on to read that every year a few thousand minks escape, which it makes me chuckle, but I guess.
But it's everywhere, right? Like, have you ever been driving down the road? So here in Georgia, we have a lot of poultry plants. But have you ever been driving down the road and you just see like this one white chicken?
Yeah. Sometimes alive and sometimes not. It's
like he jumped off the truck, he escaped. Yeah. So I'm certain that they have a normal attrition. Right? Like that happens with just their escaped chickens.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. You pulled an article about facial recognition. And so we'll get to the article in a second, but we are currently using this technology in the practice, right? As you recall with our SETI view.
Yes, we are.
From IDEX, we are using facial recognition technology.
With our diagnostics equipment. Yes. I thought you were talking about with pets. I was a little confused. But to your point, we do use facial recognition, even though it's not a face, but we use the same software
imaging. To look at urine samples and the cells within, and they automatically classify what we're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
So, this article is about facial recognition software in animals.
This is specifically talking about returning lost pets to owners.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're looking at the picture of, you know, three animals and they're plotted out and mapped out. boy, I don't know how accurate this is going to be. I'm wondering if it says that to date, the app that was developed along, you know, with this technology, they've recovered more than 15,000 pets. They say 15,000 pets have been reunited with their owner. I wonder if it has to do with location, you know, and using the facial recognition and some other factors. Because quite honestly, a chocolate lab or a black lab or a yellow lab's face, while there's always a little bit of difference, if you got 100 of them lined up, the same breed and species, I almost think 50% are going to look exactly the same based on this facial recognition.
Well, I would be interested to see their facial recognition, right? So let's talk real quick on human facial recognition. We've talked about this. So I have an iPhone, and my iPhone recognizes my face, and it unlocks, and it lets me pay for things, and it remembers my passwords and all of this thing. However, it's not smart enough to only remember my face from the eyes up. So like when I'm wearing a mask during COVID times.
They were supposed to be... Did that come out?
I'm not aware.
On an update?
Work.
I feel like it...
It doesn't work for me.
Okay.
But, and so I think the less features you have, the harder it is to recognize. And so to your point, some of these like black labs that they're literally black all over. And I mean, are they measuring distance, like the size of the nares, the size between the eyes, like all of that? I mean, there may be some differences.
Yeah.
But,
I do think they're looking at ear setting and carriage, you know, eyes, how big are they? What's the distance between, you know, the nose, the mouth. So all these little lines they're plotting. I don't know if they're using color recognition.
I was going to say, because like, what if, you know, you lost your dog a year ago and he's a little bit more gray now? Or what if, you know, your dog had short hair and then the hair grew out? Does the hair affect the facial size?
It's cool. It's cool. And I hate to be skeptical, but I typically am a little bit.
But naturally you are.
You know, definitely things are changing. We still need to get, I forget the guy's name on, who wants to talk about the health trackers.
Oh, yeah.
They reached out a couple of times and, you know, kind of see where he is and their particular company is with using these trackers and technology. But this is cool. I just don't.
This is claiming this app, so Finding Rover is claiming 95% accuracy.
Yeah. Gosh.
I get your skepticism, but where I mean, 15,000 pets and 95% accuracy. I mean, those numbers look better than some COVID numbers I've seen lately.
Yeah, for sure. I thought the article might go into pain scales, like we might be able to measure pain and discomfort based on facial recognition.
That's
normal pet versus comparing like to the Colorado State pain scale that we use in clinic.
That's
and so I thought that would be kind of cool. You just scan your patient and you take some of that human subjectivity out of it. So, but it didn't go there.
No, it didn't.
There's
go
maybe
there,
an idea for someone.
Maybe someone can run with that and make you a very wealthy man.
So, well, make themselves very wealthy. I just had the idea.
So I had a couple of things that I pulled. So kind of pivoting off of things that we've talked about recently. So the whole pet names thing.
Yeah.
Pet names, it kind of came up in the AVMA news brief for the GVMA that pet names are a sign of the times. And we talked about how we have a dog here named Fauci.
Mm-hmm.
But they're seeing across the United States that more and more pets are being named things like Covey and Rona and Corona. But I thought it was interesting that still the top 10, like those names haven't even cracked the top 10, but the number one name for a female is Bella, dogs.
That's like, isn't that for like 3 years, I mean, 5 years running?
Seems like for a long time. And then for male dogs, it's Max, which I think is kind of like interesting because I feel like Max kind of fell off the bandwagon for a while and here it is back.
Yeah. We used to have a dog named Max growing up, Border Collie.
You did as a family?
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was interesting. Obviously, pet names are very much, I guess, a talkative subject because people get their names from anything, right? So like I have a cat named Sprinkles and people make fun of me, but I named her that because when she was a kitten and you flipped her over on her back, her belly looks like you poured sprinkles on her.
Oh, wow.
I
don't think I knew this story.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's always interesting to me. Pet names are super, super interesting. From I think when we were talking to Jennifer James, she likes pet names that are very human-like.
Yeah, and I agreed, yeah.
Yeah. I like some cuter names.
Like Doug.
Yeah.
That's an awesome name for a cat.
Yeah.
So.
Anyways.
The most interesting story to me, kind of scientifically, comes out of Texas A&M, and they have partnered in some form or fashion with Volition, a Belgium-based epigenetics company that typically develops blood tests that help diagnose a range of cancers and other diseases in people. And so they partnered with A&M, and I believe it was the GI lab there, which is pretty innovative in our industry, to come up with a blood test for cancer in dogs only, is my understanding.
But it's also a range of cancers, right? So I was reading through this, and I think there was a test of predisposition for cancer at some other university, but it was for a specific type of cancer. I want to say it was like lymphoma or leukemia or something along those lines.
Yeah, so this test for lymphoma and also hemangiosarcoma, which are probably, well, they're definitely in the top five. I would just add maybe mast cell disease as a third that's super common. But mast cell disease is typically presented on the outside as a lump or a bump that right. we can aspirate. So lymphoma and hemangiosarcoma, especially hemangiosarcoma affecting the spleen and then ultimately some other organs, often goes undiagnosed until the time that the tumor on the spleen gets so big that it ruptures and the dog almost bleeds out into its abdomen. And so they present as an emergency. If we could diagnose those much, much earlier and get a definitive diagnosis and work them up and go in and remove the spleen, I'm kind of excited that those pets would do very, very well and we would be able to do a lot of good. Lymphoma, I'm not 100% sure if it's just lymphosarcoma or other types of lymphoma. Mm-hmm. There's kind of, you know, the range. So I think that's very cool as well, and it would be useful looking for both of these. And certainly you could use this to, we occasionally will get a case that we have to biopsy the lymph node and we go back and forth and we don't really know. And so, I don't know, it's super exciting. And basically we would pull a blood sample and at this point I think mail it to A&M for them to run the test, but it's almost point of care test, but we would have to wait on the results. And so,
yeah. So I was reading here, it looks like their target demographic or their target audience here for this is the test is available to veterinarians in the North America.
Yep.
And they expect that you're going to use it during annual wellness checks for older dogs where there's already a suspicion of cancer. Yeah.
Or maybe
younger dogs with specific breeds that have a risk of developing cancer in their lifetime.
Such as the Golden Retriever.
My Golden Retriever.
Yes.
Who is going to be 3 in April. So maybe he would like to be a guinea pig for us for this this test
here. It's cool. I mean, this is really kind of hot in the news now. I believe this week, maybe 2, 3, 4 key opinion leaders in medicine, internal medicine, are going to be hosting some webinars talking about this. So it's going to be here pretty quick.
Yeah. Well, just kind of pointing out some other things here. Not that people don't obviously know that cancer is pretty devastating and definitely affects a lot of pets and people as well. But there's a quote here, or there's a mention here that cancer is the most common cause of death in dogs over the age of 2 years old in the United States.
Yeah.
I don't know that I would have guessed that, but it's like I said, it's pretty devastating. And I guess when you put it up there, I certainly believe it because like we talked about, cancer in pets, just like in people, can present in many, many different ways. And we oftentimes, to your point, talk about lumps and bumps or growths or tumors.
It's cancer.
But it's truly cancer.
We need to start maybe celebrating cancer survivors more in the practice, right? In people, it's huge. No matter what kind of cancer you had or have, if you live, you know, past it, you're a cancer survivor. And again, we talk about tumors, lumps, bumps, neoplasia, sometimes the big cancer word. I don't know. We need to humanize that a little bit more, I think, because it's a big deal. And
we could.
And
it is a big deal. I would tend to go down like the little bit of a morbid route, right? Like because dogs, ultimately, their life expectancy is a little bit less. I mean, when we do have them go into remission or when we do recover them from cancer, I mean, they're not living for 40 more years.
Right.
You know, it's still a short period of time. But I do agree with you. Maybe we should try to have a little bit more of a celebratory effect here, because these people are obviously the people who are investing into the chemotherapy treatments and that kind of thing are obviously super invested in those dogs.
Does it list the name of the test?
It does. The name of the test is NU-Q Vet Cancer Screening Test.
That's right. NU-Q Vet Cancer Screening Test. So that's super exciting. And, you know, that definitely will kind of fit into our Healthy Pet Happy Life segment there, as far as that's something we're definitely going to not only offer but recommend in, the, in that select set of pets that you mentioned. So cool. Exciting. Cool
that is
stuff.
Very exciting.
I didn't have a whole lot of other topics. There was MR scanner.
So do you remember when we were talking about the cougars, right? The one in the mountain lions, I guess, in Utah.
It's like, what are you talking about cougars here all of a sudden?
No, the mountain lions that like attacked that family dog and then the one that attacked those people. So apparently the CDC puts out a list or put out a list of the most dangerous pets by state. And I couldn't find the actual like CDC list, but I found a list. Here's one for you to share. I found a list on an article where they kind of mentioned some of the states. So I found it interesting that the mountain lion is not necessarily on here.
Okay.
But we do have like the cougar in Colorado, bobcats with rabies in Connecticut.
Interesting.
So rabid bobcats, that sounds really scary. California rattlesnakes. I think there's 6 different types of species of rattlesnakes. In Arkansas and Idaho, the bear is the most dangerous. Alaska and Maine, it's the moose. Alabama and Arizona, it's the dog.
Interesting, surprising, but when you think about it, makes sense.
It's crazy. Delaware was coyotes. Florida is mosquitoes. And I thought I put a little note here that they're classifying a mosquito as an animal, first of all.
Okay.
But that the reason being that it's the most deadly or the deadliest animal is because of all the diseases that it carries.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's on the coast, they're getting actually a lot of mosquitoes that are coming over with other diseases.
So now, since we're in the middle of a pandemic, and it's listed here, you know, a couple of the most recent, they weren't pandemics, obviously, but big mosquito-transmitted diseases that we have dealt with. One actually affected the last Summer Olympics. So,
I don't know what you're talking about, but okay. I can tell you West Nile virus.
West Nile was before that.
That was, yeah, that was probably 10 years ago when it was a very big, scary, popular.
What was the disease, and it just completely slipped my brain, that affected pregnant women and would cause like microcephaly, the Summer Olympics were affected because of a lot of people didn't want to go down to Brazil or wherever they were.
Rain check, please.
Okay.
I have no idea.
You keep talking. I'm going to look it up.
Okay. You look it up. So these mosquitoes in Florida, they're talking about, they have diseases or they carry such diseases as Eastern equine encephalitis, which people can get even though it's an equine disease. And maybe that's a whole other discussion and day of topics, but West Nile virus, the dengue fever, malaria, Rift Valley fever, yellow fever. I mean, the list goes on. But because again, Florida is that, I guess that coastal area, they're getting these diseases from other
Zika
countries and
virus.
States. Oh, the Zika virus.
Yeah, I did.
And that is mosquito transmitted. Yeah.
So that's the most recent new disease, really prior to Corona, I think.
Yeah. One quick other thing. So just kind of going back through those. So Hawaii tiger sharks, that's not surprising, right?
Indiana deer.
Indiana is the deer. And so the reason being, it's not that the deer are aggressive, but it's that they contribute to the majority of vehicle collisions and then in resulting in death.
So again, the deadliest animal is defined in this study or compilation by the number of deaths due to animal
yes
attacks or related to animals. Mm-hmm.
So. And then in Iowa and Kansas, domestic cattle, and they were very specific to say domestic because I don't think that they have, you know, just wild cattle out there. Blunt force trauma. So to the chest or the head, people being trapped or cornered in places.
As a kid, I was at a steer show one time and I was walking behind them and one just kicked me right in the gut, took my breath away. I thought I was going to die. My dad actually got kicked shutting the back of a gooseneck trailer loading cattle, kicked in the eye.
Oh, gosh.
And lost his vision in his eye.
Permanently lost his vision. Oh, yeah. Wow. I didn't know that.
And then multiple times as a large animal veterinarian, I barely made it up the fence with a bull chasing me.
Oh, wow.
So that's one reason I quit being a large animal veterinarian.
So I guess this is going to sound really silly, but I don't have a lot of experience with large animal outside of like my internship or my what I had to do to get my license or to graduate school. But am I wrong into think that like cows kick one way and horses kick the other? So like you never want to be like to the side of a horse, but to the back of a cow.
Cows will kick backwards, but then they will do a side kick to where they bring their knee up and kick out to the side. It's kind of
so the cows weird. Kick it's, sideways.
It's weird to see it. Like you can see it coming, but you usually don't know how to get out of the way quick
so
enough.
So they take out your knees or like what?
Wherever they hit you is what they're going to work on.
Gosh, that sounds terrifying.
So, kind of a sidewinder type of a kick. Kind of like us. We can kick straight back, but we could pick our leg up and kick to the side.
Yeah.
So they kind of turn their knee a little funny, and then it's almost this boomerang slingshot kind of a bam.
And so horses typically, they always say don't stand behind a horse because they're going to kick backwards.
Yeah. So if you're going to cross, here we go in our large animal segment. If you need to get from one side of a horse to the other, go under or go in front of their chest, under their neck.
Not underneath them.
They may bite you, which I've been bitten by a horse as well, which was the most painful thing I've ever experienced.
That's so funny.
But yeah.
Okay.
So
to round out or to finish off that list, Georgia. So Georgia, I couldn't find on the actual CDC deadliest animal, but I listed here that we have snakes, deer, mosquito, bobcat, black bears. So we have basically
everything.
The running gambit of all of these things that are listed as the deadliest, minus the moose and the tiger sharks. We have, you know, all the things. So Georgia's a pretty dangerous place.
Yeah. Interesting. Let's wrap up shortly. We'll kind of get into maybe some Christmas discussions as far as how it affects animals and maybe some toxins and things. But I don't know. Anything else on your list to talk about?
Yeah, I have one more what I think is interesting topic. And so I think it somewhat affects us a little bit here in our home, if you will. But, you know, we've talked about veterinary schools and how they're opening new vet schools and that kind of thing on the podcast many a times before. But I recently tore this out of a magazine, the DVM 360 magazine for November, and it says veterinary school applications skyrocket. And so preliminary data reveals a 19% increase in application rates compared with last year. These are applications for the 2021 admission cycle.
Okay.
19%. I think that's crazy. So the
and
story
probably like qualified applicants. It's not just
yeah. It's any not and like every... mm-hmm, yep. So historically, just to give everyone kind of some reference, so the average over recent years has been about 6 to 7% of annual growth. But during 2021, the admission cycle has totally just topped the charts here at 19%. The reason that the AVMA is attributing to this is because of the coronavirus and the pandemic and how the public is so aware of the vital role that the veterinary professional plays in zoonotic disease research, treatment, and vaccine development.
Huh.
And so I thought that was pretty interesting.
So it has nothing to do with staying at home and more pets as far as the AVMA is concerned.
But it has everything to do with this pandemic shedding light on the veterinary industry and the importance of veterinarians and the professionals in the practices. And that actually, it like I said, it kind of hits home a little bit because we have been saying that I personally feel that that's probably why we're seeing an increase in patient visits is because people are starting to see the importance of it. Not necessarily like COVID related, but the more they spend time with their pet, the more important they see their pet's health.
Yeah, the more they are a member of the family, and so they want to take care of their pet's health. Hopefully they're getting educated, not only from us, but other sources. However, I'm going to say there are those clients that will just start taking the advice of Google and, you know, the person they got their pet from and the kid that sells the dog food. And, you know, there's just, we always talk about the amount of information and what do you believe, what do you not. It's pretty ridiculous how much information is out there.
And so readily available, accurate or not.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I heard a couple of days ago, highest death rate for the day due to corona, or highest daily death rate ever due to coronavirus. I still don't understand how in March, when all of this kind of happened, we had 260 plus thousand deaths.
Just people, you know.
You know, in March.
Mm-hmm.
And so now it's supposedly at its worst, and we have the highest daily death rate. And I don't know what the total count is, but it's like 280,000.
Nationally?
Nationally, over 6 months of this. So, I'm not proposing. I know why, but sure. It's just weird to me, the numbers and the way they're reported. And my mom thought she had coronavirus. She's been sick. She went and did a self-test through CVS. It came back negative, and now she thinks, well, she didn't test right, because she probably didn't. She just went around the lower part of her nostril, didn't go up in the brain.
They do self-test at CVS? That's interesting. Because
they
don't
want contact, that, you know. So there's a lot of variables out there. And you know, I'd share with you. Well, we won't talk. That's personal anyway. Okay. So anyway, that's all I have for this week.
Okay. Well, check in next week as we discuss more in the news and in our industry. Follow us on Instagram at People Pets and Vets. Follow all of our clinics on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And check out our blogs on our website at mygavet.com. Please hit subscribe wherever you're getting this podcast from. And remember, without people, pets are simply animals.
Bye, guys.